I would be dealing with the history of Advaita Vedanta, and I would show how the Vedanta that is developed later by Shankara was there in a form in the pre-Shankara period and how it came about in the post-Shankara period. So the title of my this lecture is The Journey Through the Vedantic History, Advaita in the pre-Shankara, Shankara and post-Shankara period. Now, I have already dealt a bit with the formulation of Vedantic schools in India and what is the genesis of this, please come, genesis of the schools, like so many schools in Vedanta we have in India. And we have already seen that since the Advaita has its roots in the Vedas, which are expounded from very ancient times, the system cannot be given a particular date or dated in an exact historical manner. Howsoever, the earliest formulation of Advaita can be traced to the Mandukya Karika of Gaudapada, about which I spoke a little in my last lecture. The predecessor of Gaudapada is, you know, as the tradition I try to trace, like Narayana, then Brahma, then Vasishta, then Shakti, then Parashara, then Sukha, then Vyasa, then Sukha, then Gaudapada, then Shankara. So, the predecessor, the Gaudapada is the only one whose text is available to us today. The predecessor of Gaudapada is Sukha. There is no authentic history to prove the person and the date of Sukha, who is spoken of as the teacher of Gaudapada. Sukha is known to be the author of Bhagavata Purana, but there is no clue to prove that it is written before the time of Shankara. The next predecessor is Vyasa, and by and large he is identified with Vadarayana, though we do not have any clue from the works of Shankara that Vadarayana and Vyasa are one and the same person. Vachaspati Mishra, howsoever, pays his salutations in the introductory verse of his commentary called Bhamati, saying, Brahma Sutra Krute Tasmai Veda Vyasaya Dhimate. He talks about the Vyasa being the author of Brahma Sutras. But otherwise it is Vadarayana that is being accepted in the tradition. Shankara talks about that. Since there are reference to the Samkhya, Vaisheshika and Buddhist schools in the Vadarayana Sutras, Brahma Sutras, he must be after the period of Buddha and the schools that which came after Buddha's period. And hence, comfortably, we may assign the date of Vyasa or Vadarayana to be 200 BC. The teachers before them, like Parasara and others, are only mythological ones and we cannot find any historical proof for their age. Hence, the Brahma Sutra and Mandukya Karika are the authentic pre-Shankara works available to us. The preceptors from Narayana to Sukha grew up in a family. They were father-son relationship between them. The Narayana son was Brahma, Brahma's son was Vasishta, like that it came up to Sukha. The Upanishads also give us the clue that there are many celebrated people like Atharvan, Bharadwaja, Yajnavalkya, Uddalaka and the like who took part in the meaningful discourses. Yeah. With their own people in their own family. It was a family school that they were growing. All these sages had ashramas in different parts of the country and Shankara must have been influenced to build his mathas in their model. Brahma Sutras. There must be many works called Brahma Sutras, of which the Sarirakam Mimamsa Sutra of Vadarayana is survived to us. Shankara, in his Brahma Sutra Bhashya, refers to quite a lot of the names, those who were the authors of sutras. Shankara refers to Badari, Jaimini, Kasakruchna, Kasnajini, Asmarathya, and Atreya, who must have summarized the teaching of the Upanishads in their works in the form of sutras. Of late I saw one book in Vishishtadvaita where a commentator has written a commentary on Ramanuja's Bhashya. He says the Ramanuja wrote the Bhashya after referring 96 Bhashyas. See, that many Bhashyas were there. It is not available to us. I would also present this assembly that the Bhakti Sutras of Sandilya and Kashyapa were written before Shankara. Kashyapa seems to be a total dualist who believed in a type of dualism like Madhva did, and Sandilya seems to be a theistic non-dualist like Ramanuja. Though different teachers wrote on different small parts of the Upanishads highlighting different teachings, it was Badarayana who wrote on the whole tradition of karma, jnana and yoga. Vachaspati Mishra tells that Badarayana was a Sarvabhauma. He knew everything. He was a universal teacher. The pre-Sankara preceptors who were well known before Sankara were Bhartru Prapancha, Dravidacharya, Sundara Pandya, Bhartru Mitra, Brahmanandin and Upavarsa. They are all referred to by Shankara, Sureswara and Vachaspati Mishra. Shankara and Sureswara refer to Bhartru Prapancha as Upanishadang Manya. In Sanskrit there is a type of formation. If you put Manya, then it will mean something. It is criticizing somebody. Like suppose somebody is not a scholar and he thinks that he is a scholar, we say Panditang Manya. He thinks that he is a scholar. Like that, he says, Shankara says that he is Upanishadang Manya. He thinks that he knows Upanishad. So, Shankara and Sureswara refer to Bhartru Prapancha as Upanishadang Manya. He thought that he knew Upanishad. Sureswara criticizes Bhartru Prapancha in his Naishkarma Siddhi very vigorously. Brahmanandan wrote a Chandogya Vakya wherein he gave the summary of the Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad. Dravidacharya wrote a commentary on Chandogya Upanishad. There is a dispute between Advaita and Vishishtadvaita schools as to which tradition Dravidacharya belongs to. Shankara refers to Dravida in his commentary to Brahma Sutra and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Bhashya. Ramanuja gives a good lot of importance to him as one of the teachers of Sri Vaishnava tradition. Recently, under the influence of Kanchi Mahaj, the Shankaracharya, there was a scholar called Polagam Ramashastri. He writes the fragments of the thinking of Dravidacharya in a text, and it is published in the auspices of Kanchi Matha, where he says that Dravidacharya is an Advaitic preceptor. So, Hiriyana tries to formulate the philosophy of Brahma Datta. Sudarsana Suri calls Brahma Datta as an old Mayavadin, Jaran Mayavadin. He is an old man talking of Mayavada. Though Shankara and Vachaspati criticize the view of Brahma Datta, Brahma Datta seems to have influenced the Advaita tradition a lot in pre-Shankara period. Shankara, at the end of commentary to his Bhashya, that is Samanvaya Adhikarana, quotes three verses from an Acharya who has been influenced with Sundara Pandya by later Advaitins. Kumarila also quotes it. So in all probability, Sundara Pandya wrote two commentaries, one on Sarirakam Mimamsa Sutra and the other on Mimamsa Sutra. I am just tracing the history of pre-Shankara Vedanta, you know, very lucidly, because there is no time, otherwise we can talk about each preceptor. Vachaspati refers to this in his Bhamati. He says, Atreva Brahmavidam Gatham Udaharanti. That is what he says. Prabodha Parisuddhi. See, there is a dispute whether Sundara Pandya was a pre-Shankara Advaitin, whether Shankara was influenced and Advaita was there in some form in the south. That was a dispute. And in order to prove that there are some Advaita in some form, all the pre-Shankara Advaitins need to be looked into. Their philosophy also should be seen. ప్రబోధ పరిశుద్ధి ఏ కమెంట్రీ ఆన్ పద్మపాదస్ పంచపాదిక రెఫర్స్ టు సుందర పాండ్య డైరెక్ట్లీ సెయింగ్ శ్లోకత్రయం సుందర పాండ్య ప్రణీతం ప్రమాణయతి. సో హీ వాజ్ హీ వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ సెడ్ వాజ్ ఎ ప్రమాణ. ది రెఫరెన్స్ టు భర్తృమిత్ర ఇస్ ఫౌండ్ ఇన్ కుమారిలా అండ్ మండన మిశ్ర. బ్రహ్మానందన్ హూ ఇస్ ఆల్సో నోన్ అస్ టంక, టంక వాజ్ ఎ గ్రేట్ స్కాలర్ ఇన్ విశిష్టాద్వైత ట్రెడిషన్ అండ్ టంక ఇస్ బీంగ్ టేకెన్ యాజ్ ఎ గ్రేట్ సపోర్ట్, టంకస్ వ్యూ హూమ్ శంకర టేక్స్ యాజ్ ఎ సపోర్టర్ ఆఫ్ వివర్తవాద అండ్ భాస్కర కన్సిడర్స్ హిమ్ యాజ్ ఎ పరిణామవాదిన్. రామానుజా ఇస్ ఆఫ్ ద వ్యూ దట్ టంక సపోర్టెడ్ విశిష్టాద్వైత స్కూల్ అండ్ హీ ఇన్లీడ్స్ టంక యాజ్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ద హిజ్ ప్రిడిసెసర్స్, వన్ ఆఫ్ ద టీచర్స్ ఆఫ్ విశిష్టాద్వైత. ఉపవర్స వాజ్ అనదర్ గ్రేట్ అద్వైతిన్ హూమ్ శంకర రెవరెన్షియలీ కాల్స్ యాజ్ భగవాన్ ఉపవర్స అండ్ కోట్స్ హిజ్ థియోరీ ఆన్ వర్ణజ్ అగేన్స్ట్ ద థియోరీ ఆఫ్ స్పోర్ట్. వర్ణ మీన్స్ నాట్ దిస్ వర్ణ జాతి నాట్ ద కాస్ట్, వర్ణ మీన్స్ ద లెటర్స్ ద ఫిలాసఫీ బిహైండ్ ద వర్డ్స్ దట్ గ్రామర్. సో వర్ణజ్ అగేన్స్ట్ ద థియోరీ ఆఫ్ స్పోర్ట. సవర స్వామిన్ కోట్స్ ఉపవర్సస్ వ్యూస్ ఇన్ హిజ్ మీమాంసాసూత్ర భాష్య. రామానుజ ఐడెంటిఫైజ్ ఉపవర్ష విత్ బోధాయన అండ్ ఆన్ ద బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ దాట్ వృత్తి హీ సిమ్స్ టు హ్యావ్ రిటన్ హిజ్ భాష్యస్. బోధాయన వృత్తి ఈజ్ ఆల్సో లాస్ట్ ఆఫ్టర్ రామానుజ. ఇట్ వాజ్ అవైలబుల్ డ్యూరింగ్ ద పీరియడ్ ఆఫ్ రామానుజ. ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ దట్ రామానుజ సెంట్ వన్ ఆఫ్ హిజ్ డిసైపుల్స్ టు కాశ్మీర్ టు కలెక్ట్ బోధాయన వృత్తి టు రైట్ ద శ్రీ భాష్య. దట్ అండ్ ద హీ వెంట్ దేర్ అండ్ దేర్ వాజ్ నో ట్రెడిషన్ ఆఫ్ రైటింగ్ సో హీ రిమెంబర్డ్ ఇట్ ఫుల్లీ బై హార్ట్ అండ్ కమ్ బ్యాక్ అండ్ దట్ వాజ్ ద బేసిస్ ఫర్ రామానుజ టు రైట్ ద శ్రీ భాష్య. Ramanuja refers to all these people, few of them, those who have been taken as Advaita, the pre-Shankara Advaitins, to them Ramanuja refers as pre-Ramanuja Vishishta Advaitins. Like Ramanuja refers to Bodhayana, Tanka, Dravida, Guhadeva, Kappardin, Bharuchi and others as Bhashyakaras. Yamuna refers to Bhartrihari as a pre-Shankara Advaitin. Bhartrihari, in the beginning of his Vakyapadiya, says that the whole universe is an appearance of vivarta of Sabda Brahman. He says, vivartate artha bhavena. See, the world has come as a vivarta from the Brahman who is in the form of Sabda. See, that is what he understands. So, the idea of vivarta was there already before the period of Shankara. That is what I want to say. Thus, the Brahma Sutras of Vadarayana, the Mandukya Karyaka of Gaudapada are the extant pre-Shankara works available to us. The text like Vakyapadiya of Bhartrihari and Brahma Siddhi of Mandana can be added to this list. The Brahma Sutra and the Gita were the prasthanic granthas which were there much before Shankara's period. Vadarayana's text has been interpreted by the Vedantic successors of Shankara like Bhaskara, Ramanuja, Nimbarka, Madhva, Vallabha and Valadeva. In my last lecture, I have already shown the points of agreement and difference between the schools. Gaudapada's Mandukya Karika is a very important text which provided the basic impetus for the formation of Advaita of Shankara, who refers to Gaudapada as Sampradaya Vit, a person who knew the tradition. Coming to Bhartrihari, we find that his commentators like Hela Raja and Punya Raja support the fact that Bhartrihari is an Advaitin. The first chapter of the text is known as Brahmakanda. See, that shows that it must be an Advaita text, and Advaitins accept his position that the knowledge of the absolute Brahman is possible through the knowledge of Sabda Brahman. Yes. Now, I come to Mandana. It would be wrong if we do not refer to Mandana, who seems to be a senior contemporary of Shankara and one of the best representatives of early Vedanta. Mandana has been criticized as a Jnana Karma Samuchaya Vadin. He has shown how a person has to do karma and how it has an important place for attainment of Jnana. Mandana wrote many texts apart from Advaita, like Vidhi Viveka, అండ్ విభ్రమ వివేక అండ్ స్ఫోట సిద్ధి. హీ సీమ్స్ టు బి ద ప్రిసెప్టర్ హూ బిలీవ్డ్ దాట్ జ్ఞాన అండ్ కర్మ ఆర్ ఈక్వల్లీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ ఫర్ లిబరేషన్. శంకర క్రిటిసైజెస్ హిజ్ స్ఫోట థియరీ. శంకర డిడ్ నాట్ సీ హీ మై టు ఐ, హీ హాజ్ క్రిటిసైజ్డ్ మెనీ పాయింట్స్ విచ్ మండన రోట్. But modern scholars like Professor T.R.B. Murthy and others have felt that the philosophy of Sphota Siddhi can be very well taken along with Advaita philosophy. Tradition identifies Mandana to be Sureswara, which does not seem to be a right view. But it was Mandana who influenced the Bhamati school of Advaita. Therefore, the Bhamatikara, the Vachaspati Mishra is spoken as a servant of Mandana. Mandana Prushta Sevi. He was giving the masters to Mandana. So he is the one who distinctly formulated Vivarta Vada, Anirvachaniya Vada and Jagat Mithyatva, which were taken as the bottom rock tenets of Advaita philosophy in the post-Shankara period. The pre-Shankara phase is a preamble to all the schools of Vedanta, which was the period when there is no demarcation of the various schools of Vedanta. There is only one school of Vedanta. This was called, therefore, they say Vedanta Sutrani. There is no Advaita Sutrani. There is nowhere it is mentioned like that. It is only Vedanta. That was the time when we had one school of Vedanta, and the ramifications and branching off into different schools were the two later additions. Now, from this, I come to Shankara. From the amount of criticism that has leveled against Shankara and the importance that has been given to him and his school, it becomes clear that Shankara was a person of great charisma and authority, besides being located in a turning point of Indian religio-philosophical history. As is portrayed in his writings, he was a hardcore traditionalist because he takes Veda as the Pramana. And an amazing radical, a fascinating idealist and a down-to-earth realist, a great mystic and a constructive religious reformer, an uncompromising intellectual and an ardent devotee. In the life span of 32 years, which he is said to have lived, he could achieve such things which is difficult to achieve even by a gifted human being. As already pointed out, there is no historical fact about the life and we have no authentic facts available to construct the history about Shankara's age or period. But it is a fact that he traveled through nook and corners of the country to establish back the Sanatana Dharma, which was almost languishing under the onslaught of Buddhism on the one hand and Mimamsakas on the other. During his Digvijaya, he met scholars from different schools which were prevalent in that period and debated with them on various philosophical issues. It seems he had a debate with a scholar called Mandana Mishra, also known as Vishwarupa, accepting, there is a story that he had a debate with Mandana. And Mandana was a very great scholar in Mimamsa and he was a great scholar in Vedanta. Who would be the judge? The Mandana's wife is called Saraswati or some other name. You know, different Digvijas give different names. So he accepted to become the judge and how to adjudicate, what is the mode of adjudication? The Saraswati would put two garlands. The garland in which the flowers would fade by the evening, he is declared to be defeated. He would have to accept the defeat. So Mandana got defeated. According to the debate, the person who would get defeated would commit suicide by jumping to the fire that is in front of that is there. So when Mandana got defeated, he wanted to commit suicide. But his wife came up, this is a story only. It has no philosophical value. But the Mandana's wife came and told, see, you have only won over the part of the person. I am the other part available here. So he told that you have to, he went in argument with, and the debate was on Kama Shastra, which Shankara did not know. So the story is that Shankara then asked for 1 year time and he went and entered into a dying king. and had all the Kama Shastras known to him, and after that he defeated this lady also. And when the both were defeated, then Mandana Mishra asked, Shankara told that you don't have to die. You leave this ashrama and become sannyasin and accept my discipleship. And by that is how he became Sureswara. That was the story only that I want to tell you. So Mandana gave up the life of a householder and became his sannyasi disciple, who was later known as Sureswara, one of the four direct disciples of Shankara. The other three were Padmapada, Totaka and Hastamalaka. He established many monastic institutions in different parts of the country, out of which Jyotirmatha at Vadarika Ashrama, Kalika Pitha at Dwaraka, Govardhana Pitha at Jagannatha Khetra at Puri, and Sarada Pitha at Sringeri, and fifth is also added, Kamakoti Pitha at Kanchi, are well known. Different Digvijas have their own stories to say, tell about the life of Shankara. Some say he attained Siddhi at Kanchi, and some others view that he disappeared into a cave at Kedara in Himalayas. As has been pointed out, in spite of great deal of historical research and archaeological findings, we are still in dark about the date of Shankara. By way of giving my comments, I would only refer to a recent writing, very recent writing, a volume on Advaita Vedanta, I am also involved in that project. Professor R. Balasubramanyam, a very known, well-known authority on Advaita, accepts the view that Shankara must be before Dharmakirti. All that he does is to accept the view of another scholar called Professor Shankara Narayanan from South, who championed this view. In one of my recent writings, I have shown how Shankara cannot be before Dharmakirti, since we find the ideas of Dharmakirti in Shankara's writings. And more than that, Sureswara quotes Dharmakirti by name. There has been always an attempt to drag the date of Shankara. You know, fixing the date of the scholars in India is a terrible task, because you do not know, there is no history available for them like Kalidasa. If it is a Western scholar, he will say, oh, he may belong to 9th century. They will drag that, the date as close as possible to us. If you give it to an Indian scholar, he will say, no, he will be in 1st century BC. So that is always the problem. It is like that Aryan theory. The Western few, not all. There are Western scholars who believed in other theory also. Not all Western scholars are having the unanimous, only one, view. So, like that Aryan invasion, they say that they all came from Caspian Sea. So, that happened as a, many people say, okay, they came few hundred years before we came. So Muslims came, others British also came. Does not matter, you all came earlier than us. So that was a wrong theory that was, given to us. Anyway, that has happened because there is no historical data available to properly assess and fix the date of these authors. Anyway, here, so there has been always an attempt to drag the date of Shankara as far as possible. They say, some people say that he is 500 BC. There are many theories to fix the date to be 580 to 100 BC. Here in the West, it is just opposite. They always say that the controversial dates are much later. But I would like to look into the internal evidences, like the schools which Shankara criticizes. And from that, I possibly find that Shankara would not be later than 600 AD. So now I come to the writings of Shankara. The tradition of Advaita refers to Shankara as Bhashyakara, a person who has written commentaries. This gives an idea as to how the Indian philosophy grew. See, Upanishads, after that the Sutra tradition came. In each school there is a Sutra. Yoga Sutra, Patanjali wrote. Mimamsa Sutra, Jaimini wrote. Like that, the Sutra tradition came. Then on the Sutras, Bhashyas were written. Every school has Bhashya tradition. Every school has Vartika tradition. So this gives us an idea as to how the Indian philosophy grew. it grew with the tradition, and there were the ones which were formulated without the tradition, and tradition here means texts, that is Vedas. The Vedanta stands on the three canons of authority, that is Prasthanas, the Upanishad as known as Shruti Prasthana, the Brahma Sutras as known are known as Nyaya Prasthana, and the Bhagavad Gita is known as Smriti Prasthana. The Brahma Sutras reduced the teachings of the Upanishads in the forms of aphorisms. The teachings of the Upanishads seems to be a little confusing, and this is explained in 555 sutras. Since the teachings have been logically arranged, Brahma Sutra is otherwise called as Nyaya or Tarka Prasthana. Bhagavad Gita is Smriti Prasthana. It is called as Smriti Prasthana because when Vedavyasa was writing that, he remembered, you know, that is what Madhusudana Saraswati says, that Smaraticha Bhagavan Vedavyasaha Gitaya Bhagavad Vachanam. What Krishna told to Arjuna, he is not a participant in that dialogue. He is just remembering what was happening into the war field, battlefield. So that is why it is called as Smriti Prasthana, and that is how Madhusudana gives the commentary. So Bhagavad Gita is Smriti Prasthana. For the sake of analysis, we may classify the works of Shankara into three groups. First, the commentaries on the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita and Brahma Sutras, and later on there were some texts were available in the name of Shankara, like Laghu Bhashya on Vishnu Sahasranama Bhashya, Lalita Trisati Bhashya and the like. I am not going to read that all. Minor works expounding Advaita doctrines like Upadesha Sahasri, Atma Bodha, Viveka Chudamani, Vakya Vritti, Aparokhyanubhuti and the like. The devotional works, the stotras, the hymnal literature. The common man also should have the opportunity to know the philosophical doctrine, and maybe that is why Shankara wrote these hymns involving Advaitic teachings in them. It must be kept in mind that Shankara did not give importance to jnana alone. He also recognized the importance of devotion. For Shankara, knowledge and devotion were not incompatible. There is no conflict between both. Besides composing various hymns in praise of gods and goddesses of the Hindu pantheon, he wrote the verses on holy rivers like Ganga Ashtaka, Yamuna Ashtaka and so on, for the purpose of conveying the highest teachings of the Upanishads to the common people. You know, while he writes Ganga Ashtaka, he says, the last line, I am not able to recollect the whole passage, he says that you are the one where there is Advaita involving Hari and Hara, because you came from the leg, you know, feet of Lord Vishnu, foot of the Lord Vishnu, and you are in the head of Shiva. See, the Harihara Advaita Atmika Saswati, he says, oh Mother Ganga, I would have this opportunity to stay on your bank and drink your water and take bath every day. And this is where I wish, he wrote a note that when my prana prayano chave, there would be uchava, the celebration of mine, prana living my body. You know, that is what he desires, that how you are the Advaita, you are the non-dual entity where Hari and Hara both are involved. Because you come from Hari, and you stay on the, you come from the feet of Hari and you stay in the head of Hara. See, that is how Shankara says, everywhere he sees Advaita. Like Chaitanya, everywhere sees Krishna. See, like that, you know, it is a different type of mystical world Shankara revels in. Anyway, so, to convey the teachings of Upanishads to the common people, this is generally thought that Advaita is anti-theistic. Because ultimately Advaita does not believe in a God which is the cause of the creation. This is wrong. The verses written by Shankara give us an idea that he strongly believed in theism. All these verses, you know, I wrote on everything, Bhajagovindam, Haristuti, Gagannatha Ashtaka, you name anything he has written, and not superficially wrote those, but his philosophy put the ultimate principle beyond the theism. And hence, we may say that Advaita is neither theistic nor atheistic. It is transtheistic in nature. Theism has an important place in Advaita, but it is not final. Shankara's philosophy. The Brahma Sutras contain the central philosophy of the Upanishads, and the Bhagavad Gita propounds the same. For Shankara, the entire Prasthana Traya are meant to teach the truth of Advaita for the upliftment of the Jiva. In his introduction to the Katha Upanishad Bhashya, Shankara says that the primary meaning of the word Upanishad is knowledge, though secondarily it means the text which contains it. Explaining how the knowledge of Brahman leads to liberation, Shankara says the knowledge of Brahman is called Upanishad because of its conformity to the idea of leading to Brahman, in as much as it helps the seeker after liberation who possesses the necessary qualification, therefore, to attain the Supreme Brahman. The same idea is repeated in Brihadaranyaka and is reiterated in the conclusion of the Adhyasa Bhashya. Shankara says, with a view to get rid of the wrong notion which is the cause of evil, and attaining the knowledge of the absolute oneness of the self, the study of Vedanta texts is begun. That all the Vedanta texts have this purport will be shown in the Sarirakam Mimamsa. In the Sarirakam Mimamsayam Upadeshayishyamaha. Shankara's main objective of commenting the Gita is to prove into two types of dharma, that is Nivritti Dharma and Pravritti Dharma, and explain the purpose of divine incarnation. Here he draws a distinction between the path of karma and the path of jnana. He says that, he does not say the later commentators of Pipilika Marga and Bihangama Marga. In the scheme of discipline leading to liberation, he says that the man whose mind is purified is competent to tread the path of knowledge, and to him comes knowledge. And thus, indirectly, dharma forms a means to attainment of supreme bliss. Shankara was an upholder of the tradition. He always says, evam sampradayo sampradaya vidho vadanti. See, sampradaya, what sampradaya Shankara means is he who comes in the tradition of Veda. He is a sampradaya vid. Gita Bhashya says, asampradaya vid shastragyopi trunavad upekshaniyaha. Without claiming any originality, Shankara presented himself as a spokesman of the Upanishadic tradition. However, his originality in the analysis and interpretation of the ideas enshrined in the Upanishads and arguments implicit in the Brahma Sutras are superb. His masterly commentaries and Prakarana Granthas and the hymns which he composed produced tremendous impact on other systems, but also on the practices of the common people. He was the source and inspiration for the development of Advaita after him. Now, his philosophy. I'll touch upon only two concepts before I go to the post Shankara Advaita, because this is the only class where I can talk about the whole history. So, Adhyasa. Shankara's formulation of the concept of Adhyasa as the presupposition of philosophical investigation is an important milestone in the philosophy of Vedanta. According to him, a philosopher must inquire into the native and natural mode of thinking and its resultant activity with a view to discover the ultimate principle, that is the self or consciousness. For Shankara, the entire epistemology which works on the polarity of subject and object is based on Adhyasa. What do we see? The whole epistemology, the mechanism of knowledge, is based on this subject-object polarity. Shankara refers to this polarity as the one between asmat and yusmat. Yusmat, asmat, pratyaya, gocha, like that it goes. I and you. The self is the subject and the not-self is the object. The subject, according to Shankara, can never become the object, and the object can never become the subject. Hence, the difference between the subject and object is like light and darkness. Tamah prakasavat viruddha sohavayo, he says. Like tamas, darkness, prakas, light, they are of the different nature. Similarly, yusmat and yusmat, Yusmat Asmat, both are of different nature. In every case of Adhyasa, Shankara says that there is coupling of the real and the unreal. The self is pure consciousness. It gets involved in knowledge situation, in waking and dream states because of its association with the mind. Mind, which is insentient according to Advaita, becomes a knower, that is jnata, because of its association with the self, which is consciousness. According to Shankara, the relation between the mind and the self involves mutual superimposition, itaretara adhyasa, and this relation is false since there cannot be any relation between self and any other thing. It is just like the red hot iron ball. The iron is not hot by its own nature. Fire cannot burn anything without some substratum. So they come together to become hot, you know, to burn something or to do something. Similarly, because there is fire in the iron and iron in the fire. So both are dependent on each other. So like that, Shankara says, the mind and jiva, in jiva there is itaretara adhyasa. The consciousness which can never be superimposed, which can never have any relation, comes in contact with the mind, and mind which is jada becomes conscious because of its association with the consciousness. This is called as mutual identification, itaretara adhyasa. That is what Shankara says. This identification takes place in different levels, and this adhyasa plays an important role in the secular and scriptural activities of the person. The person claims himself to be male or female, a brahmana, etc., because of the wrong identification of the self with the body. It is the body which identifies itself with brahmana, kshatriya, and all that. When it is identified with the sense organs, the person feels that he is blind or deaf, because through the sense organ you say that I am deaf. That means you have identified yourself with the sense organ. I am happy or unhappy are the states because of wrong identification of the self with the mind. Shankara says that this superimposition can be overcome when the right knowledge arises. Therefore he says, the satyanrute mithuni krutya. There is some part which is satya and some part which is mithya, anruta. Satyanrute mithuni krutya. By taking these two together, aham idam, I am this, and idam, this is what it is. Mamedam, aham idam, I am this, and mama idam, I have this. These two things come to a person because of this mutual superimposition or itaretara adhyasa. That is what he says. Satyanrute mithuni krutya, aham idam, I am this. Mamedam, I have this. Iti loka vyavaharaha. That is how the verbal usages come in the world. According to Shankara, knowledge can be divided into two types, empirical, trans-empirical. Dve vidye veditabye. That is what the Upanishad says. His metaphysics starts with empirical pluralism and terminates in Brahman, terminates at Brahman. He is clear about the fact that the difference between the nirguna Brahman and saguna Brahman reflects the difference between the state of knowledge and the state of ignorance. His distinction between the absolute and the relative standpoints runs through the entire system of Vedanta. That is what is characterized as vidya and avidya, or paramarthika and vyavaharika perspectives respectively. For Shankara, empirical pluralism is only provisional, and from this we may say that Advaita is a philosophy of standpoints. Before I end this lecture, I would like to give a glimpse of what Shankara thought about liberation and the means that he has propounded to attain it. His chief thesis, however, is that the empirical man has suffered a fall and is cut in the empirical existence due to avidya, ignorance. If ignorance is responsible for this fall of man from his original state, then knowledge alone can be the remedy for this. The state is the state of Brahma Prapti or the attainment of Brahman, and since Brahman is ever existent and always attained, you know, it is not getting something which is not there. So the liberation is the attainment of something which is already attained. So we do not usually say that we attained what we have attained. So we have to understand it in a different way, through the removal of ignorance. The problem for the jiva is that it does not know that his own self is Brahman. Shankara says that it is Swarupa Sthiti, which is Advaita Bhava. That is the Swarupa Sthiti. Brahma Bhava Ischa Mokhya. That is what Shankara says. One thing is important for Shankara. Though the Vyavaharika level is Mithya, it is not unimportant. The lower value points to a higher value. See, that is what Asatoma Sadgamaya. Not that from non-existence let me take to the existence. No. Take me from lesser existence to the better existence. It is Aparavidya which paves the way for the higher knowledge. That is Paravidya. To him, the absolute truth is the highest value and supreme reality. To summarize his philosophy, I would like to say that for Shankara, the avidya is identical with the original error. Of all beings, and mithya jnana is its synonym. For Shankara, avidya is a psychic affection than a cosmic power. In this sense of avidya, he uses the expression avidya avastha in his bhashya. It is opposed to paramartha avastha and synonymous with avidya vishaya, that is the sphere of daily life vyavahara. In post-Shankara Advaita, avidya has been taken as the material cause of the world. Even Sureswara, the direct disciple of Shankara, uses the term upadana in order to express the relationship between avidya and its effects. In the Bhashya, however, it has been expressed by pratyupasthapita and the words like that. He even does not characterize avidya as anirvachaniya, that is that which came later on. The problem which arose during the post Shankara period as to which was the locus of avidya, that was not addressed by Shankara. Shankara never calls his theory as Mayavada. He refers to it as Brahmavada or Vedavada, Vedantavada. Anyway, so post Shankara Advaita. Another 3 minutes, I'll finish. Though the tradition of Advaita from the Upanishads down to present day is a continuous one, still we say pre-Shankara and post-Shankara Advaita, making Shankara the dividing line because of his importance in the historical development of the school. The indication of the period is made to highlight the contribution, consolidation and certain formulations that took place in post-Shankara period. Though the core remained the same, the periphery expanded, giving rise to many tenets and views within the broad field of Advaita itself. Traditionally, there were 4 disciples of Shankara. They were Padmapada, Sureswara, Hastamalaka and Totaka. The contribution of the past 2 are very important from the standpoint of Advaita in the post-Shankara period. In the tradition, we talk of the identity of Mandana and Sureswara. Mandana has authored the text Brahma Siddhi. If they are identical, then the question that Mandana was a Mimamsaka who refuted his own view, which he presented in Naishkarma Siddhi. See, Naishkarma Siddhi criticizes Mandana. If Sureswara and Mandana are the same person would not criticize his own views which he spoke earlier. Like earlier Wittgenstein and later Wittgenstein. His own view was presented in his Brahma Siddhi. Some scholars are of the view that Mandana, the author of the Brahma Siddhi, is different from the Naishkarma Siddhi. That of Naishkarma Siddhi, there is difficulty in accepting this view also. Brahma Siddhi Mandana has written some other texts like Vidhi Viveka and Vibhrama Viveka, Bhavana Viveka, which is known through internal evidences of Brahma Sutra. These 2 titles are important works of Mimamsa school, which means that the author of Brahma Siddhi Mandana is not only an Advaitin, but also an authority in Mimamsa. Debate goes on as to who is the author of Brahma Siddhi, but the prevailed view is that the author of Brahma Siddhi is different from author of Naishkarma Siddhi. The 2 other disciples, namely Totaka and Hastamalaka, they wrote Totaka Ashtakam and Hastamalakiyam. Sureswara is known as the Vartikakara in the tradition. See, they say that you have to read Vedanta up to Vartika. You have to read the Bhashya, Sutra, Bhashya and Vartika. Up to that you have to Vartikantam, Vedantam, that is what they say. So, Vartikakara, and who wrote the Vartika on the Taittiriya and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Bhashyas, he also wrote Naiskarma Siddhi to show his right understanding of Advaita, and here he quotes profusely from Upadesha Sahasri of his preceptor Shankara. In the Vartika, he has dealt with what is said in the Bhashya, what is not said in the Bhashya, and what should have been said by the Bhashya, what Shankara thought and did not write. Ukta anukta durukta chintanam Vartikam. So Sureswara is supposed to be the first preceptor of Sringeri Math. Some say he also presided over Kanchi Matha. In the post-Sankara period, two schools came into existence, Vivarana school and Bhamati school. The origin of the Vivarana school is traced to the Brahma Sutra Bhashya written by Padmapada called Panchapadika. The work is not complete. There is a story that it was destroyed and then a part of it is produced from memory. There is a commentary to this text called Panchapadika Vivarana. On this Vidyaranya in 14th century wrote a commentary called Vivarana Prameya Sangraha. A large number of commentaries are written on this text in the later period. The origin of Bhamati school can be traced to the commentary called Bhamati written by Vachaspati Mishra. Vachaspati Mishra wrote on many things. A commentary on the Sankara's commentary on the Brahma Sutra. There is a commentary called Kalpataru to this text written by Amalananda. Kalpataru has been commented upon by Parimala, written by Appya Dikhita. These three form the basic texts of the Bhamati school. Vachaspati Mishra also has written a commentary on Mandana's Brahma Siddhi. See, I told that he is spoken of as a person who almost took Mandana as his guru. But it is not so. He has tried to see Shankara in Mandana. In the sense, the Upanishadic Bhashyas which are Advaitic are being accepted totally by Bhamatikara, Vachaspati Mishra. The basic doctrines of Bhamati is influenced by Brahma Siddhi of Mandana. Similarly, we may be able to relate the Vivarana tradition to that of Sureswara. In post-Sankara period, we have the group of texts called Siddhi literature. Those are Naiskarma Siddhi by Sureswara, Ishta Siddhi Vimuktatman, Advaita Siddhi of Madhusudana Saraswati, Swarajya Siddhi of Gangadharendra Saraswati. There are tough logical texts like Khandana Khanda Khadya, authored by Sriharsa, which refuted other schools. It is a Vitanda text. Vitanda means Sriharsa did not bother to give what he wanted to give. He only said that other schools are wrong. Which refuted other schools on the basis of logic without making any assertion of the view that he thought to be right. In the post-Sankara period, many independent works were written apart from the commentaries on Prasthanatraya and Prakarana Granthas. Vidyaranya, who was mainly responsible for the establishment of Vijayanagara kingdom, later became a sannyasin and wrote a number of texts on Advaita, like Panchadasi, Anubhuti Prakasa, Vivarana Prameya Sangraha and the like. Appya Dikhita was another great scholar who wrote on many texts, of which Siddhanta Lesa Sangraha is very important. He also wrote a commentary on Yadavabhyuda of Vedanta Desika, which shows his respect for other schools. Dharmaraja from South Tamil Nadu wrote a full text on Advaita epistemology called Vedanta Paribhasa. In 20th century, the scholars like Ramaraya Kavi, Anantakrishna Shastri and many others have contributed their lot for the development of philosophy of Advaita. Unlike the thinker-based philosophy, Vedanta is a tradition based, it is a philosophy based on tradition. Unlike the thinker-based philosophy, Vedanta is a tradition-based philosophy and it is a living system which is being worked out even today by modern and traditional scholars in India. The Vedantic dialectics is another field which is a mushrooming of literature. Ramanuja wrote Saptavidha Anupapatti and Vedanta Desika wrote Satadusani, finding faults in the acceptance of the concept of Maya. Ananta Krishna Shastri wrote, it is not Satadusani, there are 100 mistakes you say, no? There are all 100 ornaments for us. Satabhushani, to refute the views of Desika, to refute Shastri, Uttamur Viraghavacharya, who was a teacher of Professor Narasimha Achary, wrote Paramartha Prakashika. That was refuted by Jagadishwara Shastri and one scholar named Narasimhachari from Mysore refuted that one also. To this tradition, there are so many texts available, I have listed, there is no time. This tradition is still a living tradition, and the books in Sanskrit are still written propounding the philosophical tenets in both the schools. To conclude, Advaita and other systems can be mainly divided on the basis of four doctrines. One is Nirguna Brahmavada, that whether you accept Brahman as Nirguna or not. Brahma Vivartavada, there the pre-Shankara, Shankara and post-Shankara, as well as other Vedantic schools will come. Brahma Vivartavada, because Vedantins, Vishishta Advaita accepts Brahma Parinamavada, Anirvachaniya Khyati Vada, and Jivan Mukti Vada. In post-Shankara Advaita, these four factors go hand in hand. The first two doctrines have metaphysical implications. The third has both metaphysical and epistemological implication. And fourth has soteriological value. The whole exercise of Shankara and post-Shankara Advaitins will be meaningful only when it is viewed against the metaphysical background of the nature of the self and the theory of the identity of self and Brahman. I hope I have not bored you much. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, yes. Yeah.
The four last ones you said, you know, the four Vadas, they were Brahma Vivartha Vada, Jivan Mukti Vada. What was the other?
Jivan Mukti Vada, Brahma Vivartha Vada. Let me see what I told. Yeah, Nirguna Brahmavada, Brahma Vivartavada, Anirvachaniya Khyati Vada. Anirvachaniya Khyati. Yeah.
What is that?
Anirvachaniya means whether Maya is neither Sat nor Asat. The third category that which Advaitin talks about. See, that is why Anirvachaniya Anupavatti Ramanuja talks about. That you cannot have a third category at all. You are trying to fool people, Ramanuja says. That I will talk about one day, Anupapattis are there, one talk is given to the dialectic between Ramanuja and Shankara. I will be talking on Anupapattis. Yes, Ravi. Yeah. Yes, Adhyaropa and Adhyasa are same thing. Yeah, interchangeably they can be used. But avidya is taken in post Shankara Advaita as tam etam lakshanam adhyasam avidyeti manyante. That is what Shankara says. To that type of adhyasa, so adhyasa means superimposition. Avidya means ignorance. Are they same and are not, synonymous or not? That has been discussed in post Shankara Advaita. Large section of the post Shankara Advaita are devoted to discussing this problem. Whether avidya is adhyasa or not. But Shankara says that in a way this adhyasa is only because of, see, superimposition is because of ignorance. But he says that this is what is ignorance. Evam lakshanam, in this form of superimposition, is avidya. That is what he says. Adhyaropa? Yeah, aropa is superimposition. Adhyaropa, aropa are same. Yes, please.
In your survey of the pre-Shankara acharyas, you seem to indicate that if there was signs of tenets like Parinamavada, Vivartavada, were there before Shankara acharya? And if Veda, Abheda, Vada can be included in those?
Yes. Veda, yeah, tell me, yeah.
So what do you think, personally, according to your research?
Yeah, right, right. Very.
Is there any trace of Vishishta Advaita in Krishankara philosophy?
Yeah.
Taken from the Advaita tradition?
Right. Let us come to Ramanuja, because Shankara is not bothered about this Veda Vedins at all. he does not talk about accepting. He criticizes the school of Vaishnavites, those who do a different type of Vaishnavism, that which is not what Ramanuja speaks of. Now, the thing is, the Bheda Veda Vada is same as Ramanuja's or not, that is a first question. It is same, at the same time it is different. It is same because Ramanuja accepts Veda and accepts Abheda. When you take the word as such, Ramanuja's system is a Veda Veda system. Because it accepts Veda and it accepts everything to be the part of one Abheda entity. Okay? Now, as far as the word meaning is concerned, we can always take Ramanuja school as a Veda Veda school. But what Ramanuja does in his Bhashya is something which has to be seen for answering this question, because he tries to refute the Veda Veda schools of Yadava Prakasa and Bhaskar. He says those are the Veda Veda Vadins, not me. So, Veda Veda school traditionally would mean the school that is propounded by Bhaskara, Yadava Prakasa and others. So, this is the difference, number one. Number two, whether we find pre-Shankara Vishishta Advaitic ideas, yes, we do. Like Sandilya Sutras, if you see, Sandilya talks about a non-dualistic bhakti school. See, what is the difference between Ramanuja and Shankara? That is also non-dualistic, this is also non-dualistic. But that is non-dualistic bhakti, this is non-dualistic jnana. So, 1 minute. So, Sandilya Sutras, I think, not very sure, because, you know, some certain authors, those who are, you know, it depends who writes also. You know, there is no, you know, indifferent way of looking at a system. Always you get involved in the system and see. So therefore you cannot say whether this is this or not. Because that is the problem why Advaita has grown out of its borders in the post-Shankara period. That is the main problem. Otherwise it would have been very simple a system. The same thing happened in Vishishta Advaita also. Oh, Vishishta Advaita, the literature that is available, you must see to believe. Thousands of pages on what? Whether Lakshmi is the upaya or not. Whether the Lakshmi is a means to liberation or not a means to liberation. This goes with the theory that whether you are a praparna or a bhakta, if you have bhakti, Lakshmi can be the source of liberation. If you are a praparna, if you are giving, if you are telling God, I am yours, no Lakshmi is required straight away. You don't have to have another media to go to your mother or father. Direct access. On this, the literature you must see to believe. Thousands of pages, thousands of books. So, Sandilya Bhakti Sutra, I believe, Sandilya was somebody who was talking in the same nuances like that of Vishishta Advaita. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, and all of them are not Vishishta Advaita because they say after liberation, okay, there could be a post-mortem liberation, but that's characterized by the actual merging.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Which is not a tenet.
Yeah.
Of Vishishta Advaita. So, had it been a major school, it would have been obviously included in that.
Advaita. They were Advaitic in nature. They were Advaitic in nature. Even though no, Kasa Krishna and others, they were pure Advaitins. But they did not have a text fully like that of Vadarayana. That is what I was showing. That their texts are not available. Maybe it was available to Shankara. Or they might have written on some parts of the Upanishads or some tenets of Upanishads. They have not given a very holistic exercise of the whole Upanishads as Vadarayana has done in his Brahma Sutra. He has taken whole thing and then written 555 sutras, but some others might have written a few sutras, taking a few, one portion of the Upanishads. See, that might have happened. Yes, please.
Doctor, simple question. You mentioned that Shankara was a traditionalist. I'm very interested in the difference between Western and Eastern philosophy. It seems that Shankara accepted Veda, and that was an important principle. Does he give any reasons why one should accept the Veda for epistemological reasons?
Yeah.
Why one should accept it, not with reference to the Veda itself, but based upon logic and reason?
Beautiful. That is a very good question. Shankara, you know, Shankara and the whole Shankara tradition, they take Shruti as much as they take reason and experience into account. The Shruti alone is not sufficient to do a philosophy for Shankara. The Vachaspati, even Shankara, at times says, there is possibility of coming out or going into Shruti. Shruti is not the ultimate word. That is why Vachaspati Mishra says that if 100 Shruti says that fire is not hot, fire is cool, can you accept it? No. It has to be Anubhava. So, his epistemology accepts such a pramanic, such a mechanism of knowledge which would prove the non-dualistic reality of the being, of the reality. And how he does it, I have shown by the presupposition, a simple mechanism of adhyasa. See, that is what is being questioned everywhere. How do you take this avidya as the root cause of the everything? Shankara says, I do. And I will be dealing with this in my next class, when I will be talking about epistemology of Advaita. Why is this an epistemology? And you will see, I don't think anybody, you know, Ramanuja was not much interested in the epistemology because he wanted to strike the root of the Shankara's philosophy, that is avidya. But Shankara has developed a beautiful epistemology to prove this. How he does it, I will be discussing in the next class. What is the epistemology, pramana vyavastha in Shankara? How Shankara goes, what does Shankara talk about perception, inference, all that, you know, how, that is what the greatness of the acharyas, you know. I would not say any acharya is better than the other. Every acharya is great. But the way they have done, that has to be seen. And when we do Shankara, we have to see how he tries to see that, see what you see needs to be experimented, needs to be validated. Don't take it as final. That is what Shankara's philosophy. Don't take what you see as final. Simple. So we cannot say, no, I take this as final. Something may look like a gun, but it may be a toy. Something may look like a toy, but it may be a gun. So we cannot take anything at its face value. That is what Shankara says. And he bases the whole lot of things on the presupposition that it is all because of your adhyasa, superimposition, which is the first philosophical disease the man suffers from, the empirical man suffers from, and that is why he is empirical. And there is possibility of a trans-empirical entity, a reality, which can be done by an epistemological exercise, which includes, for Shankara, Shruti. That is the important thing. Yes, madam.
When you say he says that you shouldn't accept Shruti at face value, you should put reason to it.
And not only reason, experience.
And experience as an anumana.
No, anubhava.
Anubhava, repeated experience. As a subversive, could I ask, has there been any time that Shankara has proven that particular Shruti is fallacious, is wrong? Has he ever done that?
No, that is not what he is. I think you have not got my point. In addition to that, Shruti is okay. See, there are certain things which you do not know. What is Shruti? Then the question will come, what does Shruti do? Does Shruti do something which we ordinarily see or ordinarily do? No. There is a very definition, unusual definition given to Shruti. Shruti talks about those things which are not ordinarily known. And when something is not ordinarily known and Shruti talks about it, how much can you take it from the words that are available? Can you take it? It cannot be taken. The whole Shankara tradition, especially Bhamatikara Vachaspati Mishra says, that it has to be tested to reason and available for experience. You may say that sugar is sweet. How do I know? Unless I taste it. The experiential level of Advaita is also available. See, that is what is being taken by post Ramanuja Vishishtadvaita, sorry, Vaishnava thinkers, that experiential level, and their philosophy works less, experience works more. Sometimes logic works more, sometimes experience works more, sometimes Shruti works more. And that is what another way of doing Vedanta also. Maybe that we will do sometimes later on in these lectures. Any other question? Yeah, please. That's right. It is a little bigger a topic to be discussed here. I'll just give you the outlines. The Bhartrihari talks about Sphotavada. Okay. And what he says is, there are two types of Sphota, Varna Sphota and Sabda Sphota. Now, Sankara somehow thinks that Sphotavada gives more importance to the words. You know, it is a word which gets more importance. That is why Sankara criticizes Sphotavada. Sankara, in his Bhashya, has criticized Sphotavada. But, in essence, if you see Bhartrihari's philosophy, you will find the Sphotavada can go along with the Brahmavada of Advaita. Because it is making an inroad through words to Brahman. That is how the Sphota is being understood in Advaita tradition. But Ramanuja criticizes Sphotavada again. Whereas the post Vishishtadvaita Vaishnava scholars have accepted Sphotavada. So there is a little dialectic in Sphotavada, which Sphota we are talking about. But by and large, Advaitins would have no problem in accepting Sabda Sphota to be a means to Brahmavada. Because through words alone, there is a possibility of understanding something which is transcending words. Yes, please.
Thank you.